Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod.
Our relationship has reached a new point.
It has. I accidentally flashed Michael. Little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, it's fine.
How are you?
Oh, gosh. I'm fine. Whenever we miss a week, I feel like I haven't seen you in years.
I know. I feel like we've both gotten so busy. Like, I used to talk to you more on the in-between, and I need to get back to that.
I'm really hoping, I mean, like, I just want to see you IRL. Like, yes. I feel like this is, like, the thrilling days of internet friendship.
It really is. And I want to tell you, not on the podcast, about the bonkers last 10 days that I've had.
Yeah.
But not on this platform. I do, however, need to start today with a giant correction.
Oh, okay.
The episode that dropped this past week was the one where I had pneumonia and we talked about football. And I know so many of our listeners are just so concerned. There's a huge overlap between book people and the specific descriptions of football players, I'm sure.
There's definitely a Venn diagram there.
A punter does not kick the ball after a touchdown, extra point field goal. They punt if the team does not score. And the part I did get correct is that they do hold the ball for the other kicker for the field goal / extra point. And I just want to kindly let all of the straight men in my life know that I know. I understand.
You're listening and you're learning.
Yes. I deeply regret my football describing error.
Well, you were talking to the right audience because I was just along for the ride. I was like, sure, okay, that's who the punter is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my first clue was my brother-in-law texted, I think both of us, or our group chat. Yes.
Oh, you're right.
Michael
has
a group chat with my family and was like, Jill's description of football while on pneumonia cold medication is the best.
Unparalleled.
And which I guess, you know, my husband almost never listens to this podcast, prompted Mark to listen. And really? Also then, yes, can I just tell you that whole conversation we had, which I shared on our Instagram stories about the romance episode dropping on the week that there were like huge high profile meetings at Mark's work. No, he did not listen to that episode, even after I said, please don't mention that your wife has a podcast at all this week, because I do not want people you work with, this being their first impression of me. No, does not listen to that episode. But my brother-in-law mentions that I don't know how to describe football while on cough medicine, and all of a sudden we must listen.
Yeah, I can't miss that episode.
Whatever. What's going on with you?
Well, I was in Columbus last week. My brother-in-law was out for work. I think he was in California for work. And my sister has a 3-year-old and like a 3-month-old.
Who are like among the most adorable children on the planet.
Yes. I mean, I know that and the world needs to know that.
Yes. And the pictures of you with them. I mean, oh my gosh. It was too much.
It is too much.
Adorable.
Yes. And my sister asked, like, could you come, like, and stay? I know you get to work from home. Like, bedtime's kind of hard with one person. And also just, like, keep them, at least Eloise, because she's 3, keep her, like, doing something while I'm making dinner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the witching hour. It's so...
Yeah. Oh, she was... the level of energy between 4:30 and bedtime.
It's Isn't unlike it anything wild?
It is wild. She wants to do everything in like 4 second increments. So it's like, we're playing this game, we're done. We're playing this game, we're done. We're playing this game, we're done. Bedtime.
And you can do things like, why did you cut up my food? Now my life is over.
Absolutely. Like, yes. She was like, my sister made her macaroni and meatballs and like a banana for dinner. And she had told Eloise that. And then when she sat down, she was just like, can I have string cheese?
Yeah.
And Sarah's like, if you have a bite of your meatballs. And she was like, okay. And then she ate her string cheese and she just started to get up to throw her meatballs away. Uh-huh. And Sarah was like, no, like you gotta eat the meatballs. That's what we discussed. But that's where I was last week. Yeah. And that was really fun. And something else that, like, I don't know if you're feeling this way or if we're all just going to be feeling this way for the rest of our lives. It was just, I made just like a unconscious, kind of conscious decision to just simply stop checking my personal email.
Ah.
And for reasons that I would say are just like absolutely avoidance.
Sure.
And so I was just watching my notifications just climb and climb and climb over the, I'd say, 3 weeks, uh-huh. Had well over 1,000 emails. And that was causing me a lot of anxiety, sure. But the idea of checking them was feeling worse.
Really?
But then I was like, why do I feel like I have something missing? And so I just texted one of my freelance editors, like an editor who I get a lot of work from. I was like, hi, I have just not been checking my personal email. And I have just like a feeling I might have something due to you. And she was like, yeah, you have a piece due this week. I've been emailing you and been worried that you aren't getting it. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I can't cope right now with anything, but I'll get it to you. So I quickly had to do a piece of freelance. Thank you, Carly. I don't know if you listen to this. You're the best editor. XOXO. Don't fire me. How are you?
I've had an exhausting 10 days, which I will tell you about offline, but okay. I am really hopeful that I think it's dying down and we leave for spring break. We decided on Monday that we would take a little trip for spring break, which starts on Saturday. So I am doing that, but really just looking forward to, as you've said, I have told everyone in my life that I will not be checking my email. Which is probably a lie. It's more of like, I'm not going to respond to you.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm unavailable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to keep them on read.
Personal growth from me.
Absolutely. I just like, I'm so sick of how much of my email is actual bullshit.
Uh-huh.
That's what causes me anxiety is that like, it just feels like one of those things where like, I clear it out. The next day, I have so many more emails that are just nonsense.
Yeah, you know how people always say, like, this meeting could have been an email, which is so often true. And sometimes I just want to be like, this email could have been a text message or a Slack message or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Do you watch Ted Lasso?
I love Ted Lasso.
So I feel like I say this every time I tell you about something. We were very late to the party. We just recently finished the second.
Yeah,
season sure. of Ted Lasso. And I loved it. But in the show, Ted Lasso, he's the new coach. He selects a book for each of his players to read.
Joe, I've thought about you so much with this.
As a way to connect with them. And his aim was to get them to see in their teammates or in their behavior what they needed to be a cohesive team. And in the episode, he gives the team captain, Roy Kent, who is like a cranky, grumpy.
Hilarious.
I love it. And he hates Coach Lasso's like upbeat attitude. He gave him a copy of Madeline L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time. Did I gasp? Absolutely. Mark even paused it and was like, do you see what this is? And of course, Roy starts out and he's like all reluctant and he dismisses it like it's a little girl book. And then in a later scene, he comes across finally the passage that kind of illuminates why Ted chose it for him in the first place. And he's like, fuck, fuckity fuck, fuck, fuck.
Yeah.
because like now he understands like what he needs to do next in order to bring his team together. I could not write a more perfect scene to illustrate the power of middle grade books.
Yes, for adults.
For adults. Like they're so subtle and nuanced and they have they cover all the issues that adult fiction tackles, but in this like gentle way. So I am so pumped that today's episode is our annual celebration of middle grade books. I love middle grade. I haven't read as many this year as I would like. So I'm excited. What is your favorite thing about middle grade?
It's one of those things where my favorite thing about middle grade is kind of like a living thing because it continues to change with every book I read. I'm like, that's my favorite thing about middle grade. And then I realize like, oh, I'm just endlessly learning something from middle grade. But so I think my favorite thing, if I had to say one thing, is more of an umbrella thing, which is like, I love that middle grade as an adult allows me an opportunity to reflect in a way that when I read it as a kid, it was more present action in my life where the kids are same age as me roughly. So it's like I'm experiencing something similar to it or people around me are experiencing something similar to it. And now as an adult reading middle grade, it just helps inform the adult I became and how what kids are dealing with now is so different and yet relatively similar to what kids were dealing with when I was growing up. I think ultimately my favorite thing about middle grade is that it is ageless, and that is something that I think needs to be shouted from the rooftops because a lot of people don't either know that or feel that way.
So I'm reminded, I read this blog post and the author said, middle grade allows you to heal your inner child. And the author felt like reading books that would have helped us through dark times in our past helps us process the feelings in the present. Yeah. And I just thought that was like such a fascinating take. And it's a little bit draws on what you're saying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because especially one of the books I read today, there's something very specific in it. I didn't like relate to it. I don't think I was supposed to on a personal level, but an aspect of what the character, one of the things that the character does was relatable in that I did the exact same thing when I was that age. Yeah. And in reading it, it was actually like a little bit triggering because I was just like embarrassed. Like, retroactively, like, oh, that's embarrassing now. And I haven't thought about that for 2 decades. But then also allowed me like room to be like, well, like it wasn't embarrassing then. Like you were so excited about it.
Yeah.
And it was like a double-edged sword of, why am I being made to think about this? And also like, wow, that was really fun to be a kid.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I love how hopeful middle grade fiction is.
Ultimately.
And like unassuming, like you'll get every life situation. And I also like that a lot of times there's no giant explanation. It's just kind of like, here's our main character. Their parent is an alcoholic or whatever. And it just like cuts to the core of like, here's a story about a person in a set of circumstances. And at the end of the book, no matter how challenging the journey has been, you come out feeling a little bit light. Like not everything is fixed and perfect, but I feel like you tend to just come out the other side with a little more hope for the world.
I love how you say that because especially, and I could be wrong because you are so more well-versed in middle grade than I am, but it is like they have been very hopeful without being overly sentimental or saccharine.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the books I read growing up or in middle grade or even like some of the classics are just like perfect happy endings where like everything works out. And I think that what I'm seeing as a trend in the last several years is that a happy ending can still leave an open ending because I think kids ultimately need to know that like things are getting better, but it's getting better. It isn't better. And I think a great example of always think of Queen Bee and Me by Gillian McDonne because that was one of the first contemporary versions of. Like when you're reading it, especially as a kid, you think by the end, these two are going to be best friends again. And they're going to be like, I'm sorry. Everything's great. Mm-hmm. But spoiler alert, they aren't really friends at the end. And it's still a happy ending because like personal growth is an important thing to teach kids. And that ultimately like is a happy ending.
So I brought Jillian's new book today.
Oh.
As one of my books I'm going to talk about. And she's a master at that.
She's a master.
She's a master at it. So good. And she told me, I posted about this new book on Instagram. And she told me she's got another book done.
She is just endlessly writing.
I know.
I guess that's when it's your job.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. One of my picks today is like a longtime favorite for you and I both. And I've been reading it aloud to Quentin at bedtime. Oh. We have this
Yes, you alluded to this, but you didn't tell me what it was.
We have this super cute thing going. Like if Mark puts them to bed, the little kids, they do Wordle, the Wordle for the day.
Uh-huh.
And if I put them to bed, we read a chapter from our book. And that's, again, like one of the things I love about middle grade is just this opportunity to like read together. Like yes. Kids are never too old to be read to.
Yeah.
You know, my 13-year-olds might roll their eyes at me when I'm like, oh, let's read this real quick. And so Pippa and I will sometimes do like parallel reading.
Yeah.
Which I think is the teen version of.
Yeah, that counts.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Like, I don't know. That's just, I don't know if the kids will call it a core memory, but it is for me. Did you get to read to the kids at all last week when you were in Columbus?
Sarah said that Eloise was a little bit nervous about like bedtime being shaken up at all. So we did it together. Mm-hmm. And she really wanted my sister to be reading. It was funny because Eloise, the last night I was there, picked the Polar Express, and which is like a beautiful book, but it's also like
very long
and not like beautifully written. Like it's very like, then this happened and then this happened and here's a period and then this happened. And so it was just like kind of boring. And Sarah was, I'm not dragging her. She was having a hard time getting through it because she like, just was like tripping over her words and we were laughing so hard. It just completely ruined bedtime and Eloise did not want to go to bed. So no, I didn't do reading, but I did do a lot of laughing.
I know. We're always doing sidebars. You know, my good friend, Amy. Hi, yeah. Amy. She does. Unlike my husband, she does listen.
Hi, Amy.
Amy's daughter. I don't remember how old she was. She had this book that was like a compendium of My Little Pony stories.
Oh, sure.
And when I tell you that these were the worst books ever written, they were so bad. But of course, you go over, you're a new person. It's like, hey, will you read me my favorite book? And you're like, I'd right, love exactly. to read you your favorite yes. book. And then you find out your favorite book is My Little Pony, Friends Are Forever or whatever. and this book, it like could not be read aloud. Like the sentences yeah. didn't.
No flow. It's making her sick.
Oh, yeah. It's the memory of it is just causing a physical reaction. But you know, good middle grade is like so fun to read together.
Yeah.
I don't know. Should we talk about our picks?
Yeah. Why don't you go first?
Okay. I've already alluded to it, so I will jump right in. Quentin and I are reading A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle. And when Mrs. Who, Mrs. Witch, and Mrs. What's It like all appear and Charles Wallace is like, it's time to go find our father, Quentin gasp.
Oh, that gives me chills.
And I was like, I might die of happiness.
Oh, yeah.
So quick overview. I mean, this book has been out since 1967, so you've probably read it or heard of it, seen the movie, which is terrible. A Wrinkle in Time is the first in a 4-book series that this one tells the story of Meg, her brother Charles Wallace, their friend Calvin, who voyage across galaxies in search of Meg and Charles Wallace's lost father. Charles Wallace is sort of cryptically described as gifted, and he seems to have this kind of direct sensing or communication with like the essence of things. And it's an adventure story. I guess it's fantasy.
Yeah, I'd say.
But
like science fiction fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also very realistic.
Yeah.
One of the things I really like about it is that Charles Wallace has these great lines where he's like, I can't quite explain, or it won't go into words, or it's not a thing I can describe. And as we were reading it, I was like, oh my gosh, this child is so profound. Like so much of my life feels like I can't explain it and I don't have the words for it. But, you know, L'Engle, she bends your mind and your imagination. But then it's also like so beautifully pointing out the limits of language and communication. And I think one of the things I really like about this book is kids are constantly told, you know, you're not old enough or big enough to do mm-hmm. this or that. And here is a story where the children not only can save the day, but they're the only people in the universe who right. can.
Right.
And it respects their abilities in a huge way. And as a child, I remember poring over the descriptions of the worlds they visit and the creatures they encounter. But as an adult, I find I'm blown away by Meg and all the kids, really. Like, they're kind and compassionate. Their resilience and spunk. Like, they know their own minds and they lead with yeah. love. Oh, I mean, I just... So overall, I love this book, obviously. It's been a blast to share it with Quentin. I do want to mention one thing. It's probably been 15 years since I read this book, and okay. I wasn't a parent the last time I read it, which is probably why this hit me a little differently this time. This book was written in 1962. The kids say things sometimes that we would not find acceptable today.
You're right.
Like, Charles Wallace is described as a moron because he's not particularly verbal. Not by kids. I mean, sometimes by kids, but by adults.
Right.
Like, people at school. And the kids do a lot of really harsh name calling. Imbecile, moron, stupid, right. dum-dum. This whole list of words that I have gone out of my way for 13 years to banish from the vocabulary of my family.
You are welcoming at bedtime.
Bringing it home and saying, this is one of my favorite books.
Learn
from
full
of all of these words. So, partway through the first chapter, because it is worst in the first two chapters, and then it gets better. But in about halfway through the first chapter, we had to pause and have a conversation about how we didn't used to know that words can hurt you, like cuts and bruises, and people would say things that are not okay today. Quentin was like, they're not very nice. And I said, well, I can understand how the language they're using would lead you to that conclusion. I said, you know, this is sort of how brothers and sisters would sometimes talk to each other mm-hmm. before we knew so much about feelings.
Yeah.
It felt ridiculous. So anyway, here's what I would say. This was not a Little House on the Prairie moment for me. I still felt like this book, I want to share it. I'm behind it. I'm good. Yeah. But it's probably just worth having a conversation with your kid about how we don't talk to one another like the kids talk to one another in this book anymore.
I love that you had a sidebar with Quentin.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah, that's your thing.
That's my thing. My other favorite thing is that there's a postmistress in town, which was like, Quentin was like, a postmistress? Yeah. And I said, it's the mail carrier, the mail delivery person. And he was like, why is it called postmistress? So, you know, all kinds of fun.
So, my first question was going to be, when was the last time you read this? And this was the first time you're reading it with any of your kids?
Yes. I gave it to Pippa to read without rereading it myself. And then we watched the movie together. And the first time she read the book, she was like, it's not really for me. And I tried not to take it as like a soul-crushing blow.
Right.
She watched it. She read it again later after she had gotten into all the Rick Riordan books and she was like really into that genre. And she loved it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe just not ready for it the first time. But this is my first time reading it with the kids. What did you bring today?
My first book is called, I don't know if you've read this, Inside Out Again by Ting Ha Lai.
Oh gosh, it's been so long.
Okay, so I picked this book because when we worked at the bookstore, we had it like front facing almost always. Mm-hmm. And the cover was always so striking. It has a billion awards. And when we talked about doing this episode, I was like, I'm going to finally read that. It's only a couple of years old. It is 11 years old.
Yeah.
What the hell? This is what happens with middle grade when you don't have children. They just like run away from you and you think they all came out in 2018.
That's all right. Both of my girls adored this book.
Well, it's profound. Yeah. I mean, it is. And I was already drawn to it because I love novel in verse. It's in novel in verse. And again, the cover was so striking. And a lot of the times, like the children's awards really nail it on the head. Like, I really feel like a lot of the big awards that children's books get are very worthy. And I had never read this and I'd heard so much about it. And it's about 10-year-old Ha, I think. It's either Ha or Hai. And she and her family live in Saigon and are from Saigon. And that's all she knows. And she loves it there. And it is sort of around the entire story that something's happening. And what is happening is that the Vietnam War is reaching their lands.
Yeah.
And so very quickly, she and her family are forced to flee. And they board a ship heading for America, hoping to be sponsored by an American family. And eventually, once they get to America, she has three brothers, her and her mother, because her father's missing, I think, from the war. He was fighting. They are sponsored by who she calls like a cowboy from Arkansas. It's one of the A's. And he brings them back to where he lives. And then the rest of the story is really an immigrant story about her going to school, not knowing the language, trying really hard to understand the language and to communicate with as much as she can, and trying to find that childhood joy that she had in Saigon.
Yeah.
And she meets, I think what is necessary are a lot of adults that take her really seriously. And she has a neighbor, I believe, who teaches her English, and she starts to realize how impossible the English language is and how all of these rules around language are insane and impossible to remember.
Yeah.
But her teacher is really patient with her and loves her dearly. And I think what I liked so much about this, again, I think whenever I read a story that's a novel in verse, as I'm reading it, I actively think there's no other way that the story could have been told, because so much of it is a story about language miscommunication and longing for home. And in so few words, this character and the writer is illustrating the importance of language and home language. Like, she, Ha, is so desperate to fit in the way like all 10-year-olds want to be not teased.
Yeah.
In the small ways that she starts to have some self-confidence and trust the people around her. Also, while quietly grieving her father, who she's never going to see again, and that they finally come to terms with the fact that he is probably dead, is another example of what we were saying at the top of, like, the story is ultimately very hopeful, but there's a lot of loss.
Yeah.
And this is a story about a 10-year-old for young people, which tells me they can absolutely deal with it, especially when it's about a person's experience that is not our lived experiences. I thought was really incredible. The one thing I'll say, I got it from the library on ebook. I'm not good at ebooks.
Yeah.
And I would always rather read a physical book, but that's the only one that was available at the library. And so I was reading it, seeing what percentage of the book was left, not taking into consideration, like, the end of the book on ebooks is like the acknowledgments, the about the author. And so I was like, okay, I've still got like 10% left. And I had just read the last page. So it came really quickly to me.
Yeah.
And so in my head, it ends really abruptly, because it literally did for me. So I don't think I'm the right judge to say if it actually does. But so much of what I loved about this was, like, because it's novel in verse, there's not a lot of time to waste on filling a page with as many words as possible. So it takes an economical approach to describing how things smell, how they feel, the emotion around them, what we're saying to each other. And so much of that is memory for everyone. And yeah. So for her, she thinks so much about how things felt in Saigon, like how the air was different, how she wished she had a certain haircut, and now she wants a different haircut because she's in America and being teased for her haircut, and the fruit she loved to eat in Saigon, and how it tastes like candy in America. And I think just is best suited to novel in verse.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't believe that I waited this long to read a book that came out literally over a decade ago.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of the last books I read before I went on maternity leave. And I loved it, but I don't think I have reread it since then.
Yeah.
But it is definitely one that we have here in our home library because I just remember really enjoying it. I'm struck by what you're saying about foods and smells. Those things are so powerful. Like,
yes,
you know, we're always talking about wanting, like, and you see it a lot around holidays, like foods from our childhood or
right.
or traditions or whatever. And just being able to empathize with someone mm-hmm. who has had all of those familiar comforts are gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that those are formed in childhood. And that was something that was really profound in this was her sense of loss of just like the tangible things that felt like home. What's your next one?
This is going to be an abrupt left turn from what we've been talking about. I read The Ice Cream Machine by Adam Rubin.
Love it already.
Adam Rubin, his name might be familiar. He wrote Dragons Love Tacos.
Yeah.
He's got two other picture books that I love, Robo Sauce and Those Darn Squirrels. I love all of those. So I was excited to pick this up. This book is different than anything I've read for middle grade. It is comprised of six stories, all written by Adam Rubin, all called The Ice Cream Machine.
Oh.
But each story is completely different and unrelated to the others.
Wow, this is not the same, but it reminds me of Tom Hanks put out his short story collection. I think it was called Uncommon Type. But in every story was a short story, but it relating to typewriters.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought I sent it with Penny to give to one of the teachers at the elementary school. I said, take this to Mrs. Reeder because I'm dying to know what she thinks about it. Because
teachers must love you.
I was just like, what a cool project, you know, like such a neat undertaking. Each short story has a few illustrations sprinkled in. Each story's illustration is by a different artist.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I thought it kind of looked and sounded interesting. And then I saw one of the blurbs, Lemony Snicket. Said, if you don't like this book, there's something wrong with you. And honestly, now that I've finished it, I mean, I feel like he's right. There's a ton of adventure. It's funny. It's creative. It's really just a brush of fresh air. The intention is for it to be enjoyed, to be silly, to just share the magic of writing where you can start with a set thing and take it in any direction you want. Both of my girls read it. I had to go looking for it here in the house to finish it the other day because it had disappeared and was under Pippa's bed. It was amazing and I loved it, but it is just, it's the kind of the opposite of all the books we've been talking about. It's just sheer enjoyment.
Yeah. Which is like kids deserve that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They kind of need it.
It's funny because you think of Dragons Love Tacos and you're like,
right.
What would a chapter book by this author look like?
Right.
This is it. I mean,
okay.
It's exactly kind of what like you want it to be.
I have kind of an idea now that you say that.
Yeah.
Where does it stack for you with his other work?
Oh, gosh. It's so different. I mean, I so love Dragons Love Tacos. I mean,
yeah.
That book is perpetually on the children's bestseller list for a reason. Yeah. I would probably put it behind that, but maybe ahead of some of his other picture books.
Okay.
But it's definitely, I think especially, you know, a lot of times kids are like, I just want to read something fun. I just want to, you know, like if you're got a kid who will only read, you know, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, right. Like, you know, they're looking for the humor. This is a book for them. I mean, it's got great writing. It has nice illustrations. but it's in really digestible chunks since the overall book contains 6 short stories.
Right.
And I mean, I laughed out loud. I mean, it's funny.
And it sounds like it's unintimidating because it's in the short story format. Like if you have a hesitant reader, it might be a good one to introduce them to, because you could say like, here, this is not one big book, so don't be afraid. It's several shorter stories, mm-hmm. which I think can only help make young readers feel more proud of the reading that they do.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
What else did you bring?
So I only have one more, because the other book that I wanted, I thought it was ready at the bookstore, at the library, right before I left Columbus. Mm-hmm. So I went to pick it up when I went to Columbus, and it was not the book that I thought was ready. So I didn't get to read it, which was going to be A Mall Unbound. So I still have that to read. Yeah. I still have every plan to read it, because I really want to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
But what I did end up reading was called Genesis Begins Again by Alicia D. Williams.
I have heard of this book, but I have not read it.
And it was interesting to read after having read Inside Out and Back Again, because Inside Out and Back Again is absolutely very mature for the age group, and it's a 10-year-old character. And in a lot of ways, in Genesis Begins Again, feels like a little bit more traumatic to read, and it's definitely for older middle grade readers, and I guess I'll get into why later, but the story is about 13-year-old Genesis. Her dad is in and out of the picture. They are constantly being kicked out of their homes, can't pay rent. Her dad, she's pretty sure, is an alcoholic and has a gambling addiction. And it's the book starts with Genesis's friends at her most recent school finally agreeing to hang out at her house, and she's so excited. And they get to her house, and all of her furniture is on the front lawn because they're being evicted.
Oh no!
And they immediately start making fun of her, and she just kind of retaliates and starts saying things that she also immediately regrets. And then her mom finally shows up, and they wait for their dad, who then takes them to this huge house in the middle of white suburbia. And they're like, "How are we making this work?" And he's kind of laying it on thick and saying like, "I'm up for this new promotion at work. It's definitely going to be me. So we can afford this rent." And Genesis and her mom are very cautious to believe this.
Yeah.
She starts at this new school and starts making friends. But part of the story is that she's very insecure about, I want to be delicate with how I say this because I don't want to say the wrong thing, but she's very dark skinned and she's really insecure about how dark her skin is, because she grew up with a father who always told her that he wished she looked more like her mother, who is much lighter skinned.
Yeah.
And that she looks too much like him is what she'd say. It was what he'd say, who is dark skinned. And her mother's mother, so her grandmother, also alludes to this a lot with her and says things like, there are certain levels of acceptable darkness. And there's some history within the story that goes into it, and as to why they're saying this to her. And it's Genesis' story is her wishing she were lighter skinned. She has a list of reasons why she doesn't like herself. It's because her father tells her she's not good enough. She has too dark skin. Her father's probably an alcoholic and has a gambling addiction. And her mother like wishes for a different life. And she thinks if she crosses all of these things off or makes everything better for everybody, like she'll start to like herself more. But she realizes slowly, kind of what we were saying at the beginning of, there's no real like, this is never over. It just starts to happen that she starts to like herself because of who she is and stops trying to change who she is. But she tries to change who she is like in really dangerous ways that made me kind of uncomfortable to read. She would take baths in bleach to like try and lighten her skin, and she like, her grandmother said something about how lemon juice would lighten her skin, so she would just like pour lemon juice all over her body and like scrub like crazy, so she had scabs everywhere. And then in the end she buys this cream that promises to lighten your skin within like 5 days, and she starts to see like light spots, but then she's just looking, she just has these light spots, and it's very dangerous. And her friend says like, you know, people get cancer from doing this. And ultimately, like, she comes around to loving herself. And I did like this book a lot. But it was really hard to read. I mean, it was really hard to over and over again read about this young girl who was so unkind to herself over and over and over again. And the adults in her life not really doing anything to help. And they were so preoccupied with their own pain. Like, her mother was so, obviously loved her a lot, but was constantly concerned about her father and her husband. And, like, coming to terms with the fact that she keeps choosing him over her daughter, and eventually does say that she feels she can't believe she's a woman who would stand by her man over her own daughter. And they start to make real changes in their lives by the end. But something that I really liked about it was where the adults should have been showing up, other adults kind of came in and took their place. And she has an amazing music teacher who sees something in her, and she starts to sort of like fall into this rhythm of trusting her. And then in that, deciding to go out for this talent show. She thinks that if she sings a song that her dad is constantly singing, he will see and notice her for the first time and love her and want to change. So that's sort of what the book is leading to. And it is a hopeful but imperfect ending, which I think is the point.
Yeah.
And I have to... For my mental health, I have to assume that things just get better for her, because it really was like hard. I mean, she was really so hard on herself.
Yeah.
And where her parents really did fall short, her mother did finally realize, I have got to pay more attention to these signs of self-harm. And the one thing in the book that I said, did I tell you this? There was something in the book that was a little bit triggering, which was her talent show, because I was just immediately embarrassed at all of the talent shows that I participated in when I was a kid, and was going through all of them and was like, okay, yeah, I choreographed a dance to Smash Mouth's All Star and wore a basketball shirt and dribbled a basketball around to it. And then, the next year I did do a choreographed dance to S Club 7. And then the next year, I did do a choreographed dance to NSYNC. And I was just like reading this and was like feeling very, very embarrassed and sad. And I was just like,
no, that's amazing.
But I'm just like, as an adult, I can see how other adults were actually watching that and how good it actually was. When I was a kid, I was like, this is great. I have a career in choreography. I want to be a choreographer. And I'm winning this talent show. Easy.
But it's one of those things, like, I'm always joking about, like, when my kids practice viola, I'm wearing my sound-canceling headphones when they practice their instruments. Yes. But also, like, we went to, like, their first recital. And, I mean, the kids who got up and did the very first thing you learn in the Suzuki method is these variations on Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And the kids who got up and played 6 variations on Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And, like, I just... Like, all the parents are clapping, and, you know, my sister said something, and I was like, it's weird that you genuinely enjoy it. Sure. I have heard the 6 variations of Twinkle Twinkle 9 billion times, but just to be so excited for the little kid who's standing up there, and you're like, look at you!
And it takes a lot of guts that you lose as you get older.
Absolutely. I think it's amazing that you did a talent show.
This is actually really helpful, because I was like having a really hard time reading the last 50 pages, because I was feeling like anxious remembering that I did that and hoping to God that people who are also my age now, like who I went to school with, don't remember that. Because I just like, I think because everything pre-coming out feels dramatic to me and that I don't like to revisit. Yeah. And that should have absolutely been a sign. And maybe that's why. But I also like that it incorporated something that a kid would care so much about.
Yeah.
In the midst of something that is technically more important.
Yeah.
But to them, it's equal. Yeah, like, this matters a lot.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely. That's how a kid's mindset works.
Yes.
Well, it's how adults are that way, too. I mean,
I guess that's true. Yeah. Like, Josh had a medical thing on a Monday morning that we had to be at the hospital at like 5:30. And the night before was the Oscars. And we were like, this is less important and we need to get a good night's sleep. I don't care, we're watching it. And we got like 2 hours of sleep and we were on like the most unbelievable energy the next day.
But that's funny. So you saw the slap in real time.
Yes, I did. And I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. My last book is honestly Elliot by Gillian McDonne. As we have talked, we interviewed Gillian in season one around the release of The Queen Bee and Me. She's also the author of Caterpillar Summer.
I think she was our first interview too, by the way.
I think she was.
Either she was or Renee Watson. It was around the same time.
It was. I've decided that Gillian and I are Instagram friends since we occasionally exchange DMs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's totally normal.
Yeah.
Brief overview. Elliot is struggling. His best friend has moved away. His dad has remarried and is expecting a baby with his stepmom, Kate. And Kate and his dad's house just like operates completely differently than his mom's house. His grades aren't great. He's struggling with his schoolwork. But cooking is his escape and the one activity where he feels like he can be most himself.
Hmm.
But it's not something that his dad really understands and connects with. He's more of a sport guy. And through the course of the story, Elliot unexpectedly partners with Maribel, who is super organized and smart and popular. And Elliot gets really stressed out about like letting her down and being in even more trouble. But it turns out that Maribel is struggling as well.
Hmm.
Elliot has ADHD. Maribel has celiacs. And they build a friendship initially just based from their mutual experience of feeling judged or being outside of the norm. And their friendship grows from there. I was really excited to get my hands on this book. I think I have mentioned before, everyone in my house except me has ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that's an unusual situation. And the way that my brain works is kind of the minority. It's not kind of. It is the minority in my household. Right. And so our house is set up and I think functions differently as a result. And where other people might see mess or kids going down rabbit holes or odd interests, dysregulation, like I see creativity, curiosity, and passion.
Right, right.
And I felt like that was so well drawn in Elliot.
Aww.
He can label the challenges he faces, especially in school. And he's frustrated that he can't meet the expectations of that environment while also feeling like I do these other things like really well.
Right.
And just kind of being confused about like, why don't other people see what I see about me? And he and his dad bump heads a lot. Mm. His dad hasn't made that transition from frustration to appreciation of some of these qualities. And there occurs what is referred to throughout the book until the last chapter. So I don't want to spoil it. The incident.
Okay.
Capital T, capital I. You don't know what it is, but you do know that Elliot feels really badly about it. And it's a huge source of conflict between he and his dad.
Okay.
And I was telling Gillian, it reminded me so much of shortly before one of our kids was diagnosed, they had taken, you know, that moment where it's too quiet in your house. They had taken all the toothpaste upstairs and created the smoothest 1/4-inch thick covering across a 72-inch vanity that you can imagine.
In the house you're in now?
Yes. But then, of course, the toothpaste dried.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a mess. But the focus, I mean, it was smooth.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. And I lost my mind. I lost my mind, and I was so angry, and I was just like, what is wrong with you? And that is how Elliot's dad is.
Yeah.
And what I like about it is that over the course of the book, they show that his dad is trying.
Mm-hmm.
He's making efforts. He's trying to learn more about it, but it's also incredibly realistic. That said, none of that is really the focus of the plot. The spotlight on the plot is the big project. The pace is quick. It's fun to watch Elliot and Maribel's friendship blossom and their confidence in their differences and their strengths. It's a great read. I just can't say enough about how she's nailed the ADHD representation.
Wow.
Without it being about ADHD.
Totally. Yes.
It is perfectly positioned to increase empathy and understanding. Highly recommend all around.
You talking about the father-son experience reminds me of a moment, and maybe I've told you this before, but of when I was in high school, when I was actually had just graduated high school and was at freshman orientation at Ohio University. I was with my mom and dad and myself, and we went up, and it's like a 3-hour, almost 4-hour drive. And something in me knew that this was not right. Like, I was feeling instinctually that I had made the wrong decision for schools,
mm-hmm.
but didn't want to say that. And was going through orientation feeling very anxious. Every single new, like, group and talking about, like, student life and all of this stuff. And I just was feeling more and more like I'm in the middle of nowhere. I don't feel like I know these people. I'm not interested in partying. And like all of the incoming freshmen were like, that's why a lot of people went to the school, is because it was known for its party scene.
Yeah.
And I went because it was a beautiful campus and had a really great journalism school. And I thought I wanted to be a journalist. And we were leaving. I was staying in the dorms that night and my parents were going back to the inn. And my mom texted me, because they were in a different talk than I was in. And she was like, hey, our talk is over. We're going to head to the inn if you wanted us, unless you wanted us to wait. And I was like, please wait. And I got out of my talk and they were there. And my mom instantly could tell something was wrong. And she was like, do you want to go outside? And I was like, yes. And I could feel what was becoming easily the biggest, one of the biggest panic attacks I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
And my dad was really confused, and we get outside, and I just, like, started sobbing in a way that, like, somebody could have been dead. And my dad was like, what is going on? Like, what is happening? Over and over again, he was saying that. And my mom was like, he's having a panic attack. And my dad is so much more informed and better about this now, but then he didn't really totally believe in anxiety disorders and panic attacks in general, because he's just kind of a person who could like brush things off. Things were pretty easy for him, and he also loved college, so he expected me to have the same like, I can't wait for this.
Yeah.
And he seemed really disappointed in me in that moment, and I was really embarrassed. And then we got home after the weekend, and a couple of days later I was like rushing out to go hang out with a friend, and my dad stopped me before I left, and we were not very like intimate huggy like people. And he was like, I don't quite understand what happened in Athens, but you were clearly in a lot of pain, and I'm really sorry that you had to go through that.
Aww.
And I was like, thank you. And I remember that's one of them in my head, a turning point for him and for us,
for sure.
Was that moment, because I saw him trying and using language that he understood. And I like seeing that reflected in middle grade. And who else better to do it than
Jillian? Yeah, no, she's done outstanding with this. And, you know, I'm sure as kids read it, they'll identify with the kids. But this poor dad, and Jillian said in the drafts, the dad was like even meaner. And
yeah.
Her editor was like, I think we need to tone back the dad. And I was like, gosh, I should be horrified and embarrassed. Like, I totally get where he's coming from. Because I remember feeling like that.
Yeah.
And But the growth to go back at, you know, to your own kids and see it happen in a book and be like, I was wrong.
Huge.
I had this so messed up.
Oh, huge. That's huge.
Yeah. And I just loved seeing that in the book because I know how transformative it was in my own house.
And it's important for kids to, it's important for kids and adults to see adults acknowledge when they're wrong. Because when you're a kid, especially maybe when I was growing up, but like adults never really admitted when they were wrong about something.
No.
And it feels like a trend in the last 10 years to see that in fiction, because it is, it's okay to be an adult and not have the right answer and to have messed up. It's wrong to not acknowledge that and, or pretend that you never have. And I like seeing that so much. It's so validating to see adults and parents say to their young, to their young children and young people in general, like, I'm really sorry, I was wrong about this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it models the behavior we want to see in our kids. I mean,
yes,
we have so many problems where people just can't acknowledge that your mind has been changed about something. You've grown as a person.
How powerful is that? Yes.
Right. Like, congratulations.
Yes. I never want to assume that I've always been the best version of myself, because it means I've never done any growing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm so glad this is on the list, and I really, really need to read it now. I loved talking to her and loved Queen Bee and Me. So much. It was one of those books where I was like, yeah, this looks good, I'll like it. And then I was like, wow, I love this book.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, I saw it's gotten at least one star review, but I think it has more than that. I've lost track a little bit because it came out, I think, in the middle of February.
Okay.
But it's fantastic. I should say, Jillian and Bloomsbury, they sent me the copy that I read. So thank you for sending that along. I would have liked it regardless.
Well, amazing. I love middle grade. I love talking middle grade. Yeah. It was hard to top. I read the middle grade books we read last year, or that I read last year, were some of the best books I've ever read. So I was nervous going into this. But I mean, if this taught me anything, it's that middle grade just keeps getting better and better. Listener, we know a lot of you read middle grade, and we want your book recommendations. If you have a middle grade book that you think we would love, or you want us to chat about together, shoot us an email at info@bookitpod.com. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at BookitPod, and head to our website at bookitpod.com for more bookish content, as well as our bookshop affiliate link, bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod. And just as a reminder, in 2 weeks, Jill and I are going to be reading The Reading List by Sarah Nisha Adams together for our book club chat. So from this moment, you have 2 weeks to read the book so you can follow along with what we're talking about, and there won't be any spoilers for you because we're going to spoil.
This I'm so excited for people to read this book and for us to talk about it, because this was on my top 10, maybe top 7 list for last year.
I haven't read it yet. I have it from the library, and it's I'm starting it tonight. And you talking about it a lot. We talk about it at work a lot because we put an interview up with her on the website a while ago now. And the cover is so cute.
Yes.
I just can't wait to read it. And I can't wait for our listeners to read it with us.
Awesome.
So anyway, see you next time, Jill.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Birgit-Ragasey and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.